Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor episode. This is Robert the Tech Doctor, and I'm speaking with Allison Hartley way out there in California. How are you doing this evening, Allison?
I am doing wonderful in the great untamed land of California.
Ooh, it's untamed, huh?
Of course. I'm here. Of course it's untamed.
Of course. It was pretty tame until you got there.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Well, we're excited because we're going to have a fun and informative episode today. We are going to be speaking with a man from down around the Atlanta, Georgia area who has a most unique name and a most unique company that has its own unique name. I'm speaking, of course, of Vashon Jones from the company Fedora Outlier. And our purpose today is really to learn all about what Vashon and Fedora Outlier is all about and what they're up to these days, because they're doing some really interesting things when it comes to Apple devices, teaching people to use Apple products, and there's a lot to cover. So Vashon, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. Thank you so much for taking a little time out of your evening to be here, and please take the microphone for a moment and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you both for having me on the show. And a little bit about myself personally. I grew up in Portsmouth, Virginia. I am the oldest of seven children, and I've always loved technology. My grandfather was one of the first individuals to use a computer in the Pentagon. They literally had him locked up in, you know, beneath ground using computers and running analytical software, you know, when I was just a little teeny tiny boy. And my dad got the first family computer, and I used to play this game called Commander King. And it was like the first video game, and I just thought it was cool to be able to, you know, go around this world in a spaceship and jump and dodge and duck and all of that stuff. I'm 38 years old. I was born 3 months premature, and I had the eye condition where my eyes would shake. And I still could see, but my eyes were very weak. And of course, 38 years ago, the doctors were called practitioners, and they had a license to practice on your eye and had no liability if they were to screw something up, which, you know, my parents think that the doctors did, you know, after having 16 surgeries and things not, you know, getting better. Along with the nystagma that I had, I also had high pressure in the eye, glaucoma, cataracts, as well as two detached retinas from playing sports. So needless to say, I believe that I was born to eventually become blind, and I really accepted that from an early age, because I was always told after each surgery, well, he's eventually going to go blind in 3 months. He's eventually going to go blind in 6 months. And it was years and years later at age 31 that I actually went totally blind. And by age 31, I had experienced a lot of life. I lived in a lot of states. I had lots of great jobs. I worked on the executive level at MCI and NCO Financial and at the law offices of Gerald D. Moore and Associates. And I got to experience a lot out of life. I have driven. I do know what, you know, things look like and all of that. So I had the pleasure of, you know, being able to see and now being completely blind and still in technology. I think through a lot of the corporate experiences and life experiences that I had, and having to perform on a constant basis at a high level, and then losing my sight and wanting to do something, you know, great and still have goals and still have objectives and things of that nature, and not being able to see and kind of going through that whole process and still loving technology. I met a gentleman named Steven Soxon, and he was talking to me about Apple and, you know, the products, and I'd asked different questions on a lot of the mailing lists that I found. And I was contacted through one of Apple's individuals to work on voiceover for Tiger, which was the operating system at that time. And once we transitioned from Tiger to Leopard, everything was pretty much working as well as possible for voiceover. And we was contacted and was asked, you know, what's one thing that we could do at Apple that has never been done before? And we all responded back from that beta group, make the iPhone accessible. And from that point on, we worked as a dev team to get the iPhone up and running and accessible to blind individuals. And that's when I realized that just like Freedom Scientific was embedded in the Department of Education, Department of Labor, Veterans Administration, and I knew that Apple didn't have any desire to be in those markets as heavily as Freedom Scientific and GW Micro and AI Squared and all of those people were, I said, this is the perfect time for me to step out of what I'm doing and form my own team and start teaching this phenomenon that's rising called Apple technology and voiceover. So that's how Fedora Outlier was created, and that's why I'm here now.
Well, that is a fascinating story. I had no idea that you were involved at that level with Tiger, and I was involved with the Apple II in the early 1980s, and unfortunately, like most of us, ended up leaving Apple for 20 or so years while it wasn't really accessible with the earlier Macs, and I came back, I guess I came back when, at the very beginning of Leopard is when I came back to the Mac, so it was like coming home, honestly. And then when the iPhone became accessible, that's one of the most exciting moments of my life when that actually happened. And so it's just fun to hear about your being involved in all that from the very beginning.
Yeah, it was Anil Lewis, our NFB state president, and we was talking about the accessibility of things like the Victor Reader. I think it just came out at the time, and I'm just sitting there antsy because I'm like, man, there's this thing that's about to come out that's gonna blow your mind, and I just couldn't talk about it. I couldn't, but you know, it was just, you know, he's bragging on these buttons on this Victor Reader screen. Look, you can pause and you can play. I'm like, man, dude, this is like nothing you've ever, pardon my pun, seen before.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's exciting, man. It still amazes me.
Yes, it is very exciting and very amazing. So how does one decide to name their company Fedora Outlier?
That's another great story, and I love telling it. I was going through a transition in life. You know, I'd been quote-unquote rehabilitated. I had O&M, I had ADL teaching, I had, you know, of course, my computers under my belt, and, you know, supposedly I was supposed to be this whole person, you know, all of a sudden after these training sessions, you know. And I said, well, I want to go on a cruise and I want to take as many people as I can around the world with me. So why don't I put together a cruise package that's affordable and gather up as many friends and family members and friends of friends and family members and just whoever from around the world that would want to come and enjoy themselves. And I put together the Family and Friends Empowerment Cruise, and we went to Mexico and Nassau, and I said, you know, I want to run my own company again, and it's with the name and the logo and all of that. And you know, I was on the top deck and I said, well, I love the word outlier. I just read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, and I wear a fedora as a hat, and I think I want to put those two things together. So I said outlier, fedora, fedora, outlier, fedora, and I couldn't think of what I wanted the name to be, whether I wanted fedora first or outlier first or what. So I started asking individuals around me. I said, you know, which one sounds better? And don't think of what it's for, or what the use is. Just if you could put it together, those two words, what would be the combination that you would use? And, you know, it came back almost, you know, 9 out of 10 that fedora and outlier was the best choice of the words that I wanted to use. And I say, well, what does that represent? And this is what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, you know, it starts with you, Vishon, your leadership. It starts at the top. You know, what do you want to do? You know, I want to hire blind and low vision individuals to do the best teaching that they can for Department of Labor, Veterans Administration, and Department of Education, and of course, private pays. And, you know, thinking of the name and just what it was that we wanted to put in the industry, in the marketplace, and to the world was just something of excellence, of style, of class, of a avant-garde type prestige, if you will. You know, it's almost like, you know, if you went to Harvard or Yale or MIT or Princeton, you know, you're going to be proud of your education. And I wanted people to take fedora's teaching and be proud to be able to say, you know, that, yeah, I got my teaching kind of like, you know, I got my guide dog from and fill in the blank. You know, I got my teaching from Fedora Outlier. And, you know, I just wanted to be able to do something just as great as Steve Jobs allowed VoiceOver to be, as great as it was. So that's pretty much how the name came about.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
One of the things that really strike me when I listen to you, Vishon, is that you have a real energy and a real creative spirit about you. And I'm guessing that that's something that you have just had by nature, but perhaps something that you've had to continue to pay attention to or foster or promote within yourself, because you've gone through a lot of tough stuff in your life, it sounds like. And so I'm just curious about that. Do you see yourself that way as being very creative?
I wouldn't say very, but just really having to solve problems that most people don't have, going through, you know, being the oldest out of 7 children, we didn't come from a very affluent background, and just kind of dreaming of what the future would look like, and then breaking it down to the ground level of how do I actually achieve the things that I wanted in life made me creative. And, you know, just kind of feeding my mind with, you know, thought leaders and people that are creative and who have made a difference in the world just helps to keep me going. And just knowing that there's a need is enough fuel for me to just, you know, keep pushing and keep, you know, attempting to change as much as I can change for the better. So that's where it comes from.
But not everyone would want to design a cruise to take friends and family on, and not everyone would be on the deck of a ship and be thinking, wow, you know, I want to name a company. I think I'm going to name it Fedora Outlier. And so, I mean, there is a little magic that happens there, a real creative process that goes on. And that's kind of exciting, because that's what it really it takes in this world for people to move forward and to do the things. You know, in 2007, 2008, most of us were saying, there's just no way that a flat piece of glass is going to be accessible to a blind person, and we were wrong. But it's because of that bit piece of magic, that creativity, that willingness to push the envelope, you know, and step out of your comfort zone. I mean, that's really kind of what you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's just something that is, I guess, kind of embedded in me. I don't see it as great or, you know, any different than than what other people do. I mean, I see individuals that are blind that, you know, cross 8-lane highways, and I just think it's so amazing, you know, and I'll definitely follow them, but, you know, I'm not the that type of person. I just see things, and I see them being able to work differently and more efficiently and, you know, for lack of a better word than saying different or better, you know, just working differently. So I appreciate that. And it's just wanting to see something grow from nothing is what excites me. So,
yeah, it's really just part of who you are. And I do understand that. But I gather that for most of your life, and you said you were able to drive at one point, for most of your education and so forth, you had enough vision to do education and to do your career pretty much in a standard visual manner. Is that right?
Not really. Everything had to be enlarged. In Virginia, to get your driver's license, you just had to see 20/60 with correction in one eye. So, I mean, it kind of made that the low-hanging fruit, and it was something that you know, most people, as long as they wasn't completely blind, could pass. But I've always had, you know, I forget what you call them when you're mainstreamed into school, but I've always had that instructor, that TVI, I guess you would call them now, there, you know, and through all aspects of my education and learning Braille and how to type and, you know, using the big marker with the big lines on the paper. So I was always, again, visually impaired, but the, you know, the majority of my life, I didn't know, you know, what a cane was. I didn't know another blind. Well, I take that back. There was a person around the corner from me that was totally blind. I was more into his sister than him. So I didn't think that, you know, I was visually impaired because I could see, but I would go hang out with him to be with his sister. And when I think about it, I wish I could have, you know, just talked to that guy and had a deep conversation with him about being blind, because he was amazing. And I need to look him up. Even though, you know, I could see and you know, I didn't know, you know, about actually being visually impaired, it still was a difference. You know, the kids could notice a difference. My eyes were different, and I still got picked on. And, you know, so even though I tried so hard to be normal, you know, it was still a hard time. But, you know, I made it through, and everything is good.
Don't want to dwell too much on it, but what was the transition like for you? Just if you can tell us a little bit about going from a person who was visually impaired to being a blind person. Was that a really tough time for you in your life, or how did that come down for you?
Man, it was the best time. It was the best time. And I'm going to tell you briefly what happened. I was working at the law firm of Gerald D. Moore & Associates. We did collections. I was the collections director there. And I went outside. At the time, I smoked cigarettes. And I went outside. It was about 8:45 p.m. We closed at 9. The door is locked. I left my badge on the desk, so I wouldn't have been able to get in. I was doing my smoking and walking around the parking lot, and I'm thinking and I'm strategizing, you know, that whole creative brain, you know, being released. And I realized I had walked beyond my normal comfort zone, couldn't see anything. And luckily somebody came out of the opposite door, and I just like, hey, I'm over here. Can you help me? You know, and they took me back in, and I realized at that point my life was so routine. I mean, getting up in the morning, knowing what my clothes felt like, getting dropped off at the back door, going to my desk, walking to the restroom, going back to the offices. Zoom text was on the screen, and I didn't realize that I was gradually losing my sight. And when I finally lost it, you know, 2 months later or whenever it was, I probably cried for about 5 minutes. And then directly after that, that's what I said. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to do something great. You have been prepared your whole life for whatever this is. And I really felt that, because if you can imagine, most people go into surgery and they're hoping for a great result. You know, they're hoping to be able to see at the end of the surgery. I was always told, you're going to lose your sight in 3 months. So I'm like, okay, well, it's 6 months. Well, you're going to lose your sight in 6 months. And it's 16 years later. And it happens. And I'm like, okay, now I can deal with it. You know, I was carrying the burden of becoming blind inadvertently on my shoulder from little, you know, being a little kid. I was always different. I was always looked at different. I don't, you know, they always, you're so smart. And I'm like, no, I'm so normal, you know, and you're doing this and it's great. And I'm not thinking that way. You know, it was just weird. But when I became blind, that's when I felt whole. So that transition in what it allows me to do today to help thousands, it's amazing to me, and I truly embrace it. So the long and short of that is, that transition was great. The best part of my life.
It was a relief for you, almost, in a way, it sounds like.
Yeah, it definitely was a relief.
Yeah.
And a release, and a release. Being able to know what my unique talents were, you know, and be able to lead people that are blind is, it's the highlight of everything I do.
So you had this great idea on the ship. And by the way, magic things happen on cruises for some reason. My family and I took a trip a couple years ago to Antarctica. And we were going through the roughest passage in the world called the Drake Passage. And I suddenly realized, I'm going to ask Allison to co-host the Tech Doctor podcast. And it's been a great decision. We've worked really well together. So some magic things do happen when you get on a ship for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how Fedora Outlier has evolved. I mean, you had the idea and now it's in existence. What is it and what does it do, and how did you get where you are?
So Fedora Outlier provides what we call top-down, starting with the Fedora, starting with me, better than excellent consulting, teaching, and support. And we provide these services to private clients, Department of Education, Veterans Administration, Department of Labor. And it's a band, a team of blind and low vision individuals who truly believe in teaching assistive technology to the absolute best of our ability so that the end product is a person who knows their stuff. Notice I don't use the word training. We believe that you train a dog. We believe that you teach a human being. And we do that on relationship building, doing a great job with the counselors, doing a great job with the clients that they send us, doing a great job in the market through, you know, our marketing and our social media, because we know people talk. And I feel that if you're going to talk about me, talk about the good that we do and pile on as much good as we can, so that if we do make a mistake, if we do come up short, you know, we got enough good to definitely outweigh the bad that a person could say or think about us. It's evolved from one contract in Georgia to seven states to, you know, things that I never even knew existed, like, you know, the Mac Master Series and the soon to come iOS Master Series and Windows Master Series and, you know, our third book now and, you know, 11 team members and being able to help, you know, hundreds, thousands through our work is a evolution that I kind of pictured, didn't know how it was going to come about, knew that we wanted to be national, and, you know, we're slowly doing it.
one of the tremendous problems that we face in our nation is under and unemployment for people who are blind and visually yes. impaired. And I gather that this is one thing that's important to you, obviously, with this team that you speak of, it's 11 team, is having a way to provide some employment for people.
Yeah, that's actually my passion. I'm the chairman of the Georgia Statewide Coalition on Blindness, and I was the founder of a chapter for the National Federation of the Blind in Cobb County. And one of our cardinal focuses was employment. And it's very dear to me, you know, because I came from, you know, again, being the oldest of seven children and not having a lot of money to building, you know, wealth and, you know, being able to be okay when I became blind. And I figured that the goal was, how could I put it? I guess when you shoot for the moon and you get the stars, then you're okay. But, you know, if you shoot for the top of the building and you hit the ground, you're not. And, you know, I think a lot of times, and especially in VR and in rehabilitation, you know, they focus on getting a job, you know, versus the expectations being, you know, having a career or being a CEO or an executive or vice president, you know, when the goal was so low that, you know, if you don't hit it, there's nowhere else to go, but, oh, well, I can't get a job. And, you know, in everything that I do, especially advocacy and, you know, with Fedora, is I want to show them that it can be done. And not only you have a job, but building large amounts of residual income, you know, being able to work in margin where, you know, you can work hard for 3 weeks and get paid for it for the next year. You know, so I wanted to, you know, shatter that glass ceiling on the thoughts and social stigmas of employment and really bring, you know, the beef to the butcher and make sure that we can, you know, adequately show that, you know, you do have a passion. You know, one of my speeches that I do is called Finding Work That Is Meaningful, Purposeful, and Profitable. And, you know, we really, truly believe in that. It's a problem. And part of it is, you know, find a job, which, you know, in my opinion, stands for just over broke. And if that's what you're shooting for, and if you don't get it, I mean, there's no other. I mean, where do you go from not being able to find a job? But, you know, what we have, you know, social insecurity, it's what I dub, you know, a nickname for social security. So, yeah, it's a part of me. It's who I am. And it's my biggest advocacy issue for sure.
You'd like to see people get out of the hole and start moving up as opposed to sort of almost drowning at the bottom there with that underpaid, overworked, potentially underskilled job that so many blind people seem to end up with. Sounds like you'd really like to see that change.
Yeah, definitely. And not just that. I mean, the title is Finding Work That Is Meaningful, Purposeful, and Profitable. And, you know, even those that can see or those with other disabilities, it's, you know, it's thank God it's Friday. Oh, Lord, it's Monday. You know, and work, your life's work doesn't have to be that. You know, it's one lady that I was counseling, consulting with, and, you know, she grew the best vegetables in her garden and she would sell them. And, you know, that was the way she made money when, you know, she could see, you know, consulting with other individuals about their gardens. And she was blind and she was in Tennessee and she was like, well, what do I do? I said, well, you still have all the knowledge that you had before. Why don't you write a book? You know, The Green Thumb, How to Grow a Garden as, you know, Beautiful as Whatever. You know, whatever the title is you come up with and you sell it for $3. Well, if you sell 1,000 of those, that's $3,000. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and it doesn't cost, well, I don't have a publisher. It doesn't take a publisher, you know, write the words. And, you know, the technology is so cheap these days, you know, a couple of $100 or less, you have a book, you know, that you could sell. So it's even a lot deeper than just the stories that heard. You know, it's true empowerment and true mindsets that, you know, I aim to change. So, yeah.
That's excellent. You know, I work currently in the voc rehab system as a counselor, and I have to say that that is one of my biggest frustrations with the voc rehab model as it stands right now. You know, the Rehab Services Administration doesn't really care if folks are employed in a job that they love. They care if they're employed in a job that they can keep for over 90 days so we can close a case. And, you know, it's just, I want so badly to help people not only to, like you, not only to find something that is going to put a roof over their head and help to pay the bills, but something that they're going to be able to wake up on Monday morning and be like, awesome, I'm going to go to work now, you know?
Yeah. When the economy crashed, and people were saying, well, we're definitely not going to find a job now. And I'm thinking in my mind, this is the perfect time for you to get out there, start volunteering, start getting your name out there, because now we're on an even playing field. They don't have a job and you don't have a job.
Exactly.
So, you know, so
exactly.
That was my thought.
You were talking about publishing and doing things in a creative manner, that you don't need a publisher anymore. And I guess my first real experience with Fedora Outlier was when you all published a book on iOS. And if I'm not mistaken, I may be remembering slightly wrong, but I believe it was one of the very first books that a blind person had published using iBooks Author for the iPad. And so I began to realize that you all were willing to, I guess you could say, step out onto the bleeding edge and do things that hadn't been done before.
It's funny you use those words. And I tell the team, we have what we call coffee breaks, because crazy enough, all of us drink coffee. So every Monday, our meetings are called coffee breaks. And that's exactly what I say, because that's what was said to me. What is one thing that we could do that would change the world that hasn't ever been done before? And it was make the iPhone accessible. So I have to believe in that, coming from, you know, working in that and seeing it happen and seeing the lives of blind and low vision and disabled individuals use this product that was just a man's thought. It was just his idea. It was his ability to, you know, gather the right people to change the world. And, you know, I've worked in it, seen it, had a hand in it first, you know, hand. And I said, I want to create the first ever multimedia book for the blind by the blind. And we're going to do it. And, you know, we're going to do it to the best of our ability. And we wasn't authors and, you know, we wasn't videographers. You know, I just wanted to prove that it can be done, and it will iterate. You know, I always talk to them about ready, fire, aim. You know, it can't wait for it to be perfect. We'd still be working on it right now, but, you know, we're ready to do it. Let's fire it. We'll make course correction as we get feedback from the world and the community. But, you know, let's get it out there. Let's ship, you know, ship the product. So, yeah, we're coming into our third book, and it's actually going to be The Old Hat Guide to iOS Mastery. Hopefully by the first two books, you've learned how to swipe left and right and up and down and all that stuff. You know, now we're going to teach you how to master the new principles that are being iOS 8 and hopefully mirror them to Yosemite. And we're coming out with the iOS Master Pack, which is going to be the second release of the book, the pre-release of the iOS 8 mastery book, as well as a discount for the iOS Master series that we're about to release, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. So, you know, just very excited about Fedora and what's going on.
Well, that is exciting.
That's
and
very exciting.
It's nice to see a company like yours pulling all this information together in one place. And I am participating in the Mac Master series, which I'd like to talk a little bit about, because I know a lot about the Mac, and I've really devoted myself the last several years to studying voiceover in the Mac. And I, you know, I've read everything that's come out so far and have listened to all the podcasts and have really put time and effort into it. But the Mac Master Series is the first place that I've seen a lot of these things pull together in one place on one website, information that people can go back to and refer to as much as they need to. And so I'm actually quite excited about the Mac Master Series, what it brings to people and the way that it presents it. So tell us a little bit about whatever you want to say about the Mac Master Series, maybe a little bit about where you see it going and how you see it as being today, things like that.
Yeah. Well, number one, thank you for being a member. And it's definitely growing. I had a few people to sign up today, and it was another one of those ideas. You know, I wanted to create a membership site and I wanted to add value. I started the first newsletter off with the same thing that you said. You know, how many times have you searched for an answer to a question online or in a listserv and, you know, you've gotten 20 answers and didn't know which direction you wanted to go? And, you know, I wanted to be able to put everything in one place and have people to learn in the manner that we teach, which is foundational, which is, you know, from the beginning, and build on that. So that, again, the end product is that you will know how to use your assistive technology, when to use it, and, you know, just every facet of it. And I created the Mac Master Series is still evolving. I wanted different components in it. I wanted quick tips, you know, that people would be able to use. I wanted a forum focus, which is, you know, a particular item that we're going to focus on this week and people ask questions about it, to be able to lend that feedback that is very valuable that you get on a listserv. But, you know, I wanted it from, you know, dedicated members of the community. I wanted it to be a area of the web where, you know, people could come, let the hair down, ask questions, and, you know, really let them know that there's no, you know, stupid question or there's nothing we're not willing to help you with. I wanted to hold classes, you know, after each module for individuals to be able to ask questions. But more importantly, I wanted our team to grow in teaching. And I figured the best way to do this is to let them know that it's a safe environment for them to learn, as well as you need to press every button. You know, you need to be able to explain every single button on this Mac. And the best way to do it is to write it down, use it, do it, demonstrate it. And it just creates a roadmap for success. So we took the documentation that we wrote, turned it into a curriculum, broke it down into modules, and said, this is how we're going to release it, and came up with pricing and, you know, actually sold, you know, 40 memberships before the product was ever released, which lets us know that it was something that the marketplace was wanting. And it's safe for us to go ahead and build, you know, that ready, fire, aim. You know, now we can position the curriculum and the modules and the master classes and the forum focus and the Ask the Coach feature to specific things that the members want. So it's like a members driven club. And, you know, so it just kind of tested everything that I dreamed and thought possible in the marketplace, which lets us know it's okay to come out with, you know, the other master series. And, you know, the sales of the previous books lets us know that it's still a need for the sales of the next book. And it's a beautiful thing.
I am a very new member of the Mac Masters series, and I am so impressed so far. Just today, there was something that I forgot how to do in the voiceover utility, and I was able to go to the corresponding module and figure it out. And I would consider myself at this point to be pretty much a Mac power user. I've been using it now exclusively for better part of 2 years, and I'm excited about this, and I'm excited for the iOS Master Series as well. I've been using iOS devices for 4 years, but I can't wait to see what I can learn and relearn from you guys.
Yeah, the thing is, if you can excite people like Allison and people like me who have had a lot of Mac experience, and also excite those people who are coming to the Mac and coming to iOS who are brand new to it, if you can somehow, and it looks like you're doing it, bridge that gap to meet the needs of a wide variety of people who have all different skill levels and all different levels of knowledge. If you can somehow do that, you have definitely hit a home run.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate both of you all. And, you know, it's again, just something that I haven't seen being done in the blindness community. It's done all over the sighted world as far as online businesses and things of that nature. And, you know, to be able to find the tools that make it accessible to the blind, to have it at a reasonable price point, to be able to grow my team, grow the leadership, grow the influence of the Mac, and just, you know, just keep it going, is just something that we really, you know, pat ourselves on the back for being able to do.
Absolutely. I have to tell a little slightly embarrassing story on myself here, but I was feeling a bit curmudgeonly one day, and I had just listened to one of your telephone conferences where you were advertising the Mac Master Series. I didn't say anything. I was on the call. I just listened and learned everything I could. And so I was feeling a little bit curmudgeonly, I guess, and I fired off this email to you, and I said, you know, okay, so I'm a Mac power user. Why would I want to purchase the Mac Master Series? And you wrote me back with, I think, the best answer I have ever received from anyone in an email. You simply said, even Michael Jordan needs a coach.
That's awesome.
And I said, you got me. I am signing up right now. Because I just, you know, just the way you deal with these questions, the way you deal with people. And I think it's true for your whole team from what I'm seeing. Cause I've asked a question or two, of the coaches, and I've gotten really great answers back from people. And so, you know, it's not just that you guys are doing a good job, but you're having fun with it. And I love that.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. It's a journey every week. And every week we work hard to have fun and make it exciting for everyone.
Yeah, and that's the way it's turning out. And that's one of the reasons that we really wanted to have you on this podcast. So it sounds like that there are just a lot of things falling in place, coming together for Fedora Outlier. It must be a pretty exciting time for you right now.
Yeah, I think... you know, a lot of this started with about 6 months of dreaming with AIM. And, you know, I started off with four people, Teresa Brenner, Marcy Weinberg, Scott Rummery, Bree Rummery, you know, and they became, you know, my partners. You know, we dreamed of being in every state in the United States, Allison. And, you know, when we first signed the Georgia contract and got it back, you know, I was on the coffee break with them. And, you know, it was always great to announce good news. You know, we wrote our first blog and, you know, our website is up and running. But when we signed that first contract and got our first client and the first of this and the first of that, you know, it was just steadily proving to us that, you know, dreams do come true. You know, we brought on our second state and our third state and our fourth state in the U.S. And, you know, on down the line, we just continually grow, continue to be able to bring the right people on board, continue to, you know, push the envelope and prove the concepts that, you know, you can, you know, you can do this. You know, none of them have master's degrees in assistive technology and, you know, this, you know, this whole thing that, you know, you have to be a certified rehabilitation therapist in order to teach someone how to use technology. And, you know, it really makes them feel good to be nationally recognized and have some value and some worth in the joy that they get out of what they do.
That's the important thing. Credentials are just letters after your name when it comes down to it. What you do and what you bring to what you do is what's really important.
Yeah. And I had them talk to doctors and people that were certified. And, you know, I told the people that when they came onto the coffee break, you have to be honest about, you know, the things that we're going to do discuss. You know, if you're a CVRT, you know, the average paycheck is $45,000 a year. You know, it's not as if they're making a heck of a lot of money. I said, you're going to make, you know, four or five times that. I can guarantee it. You know, doctors that are sad, you know, not sad in their work, but they're just, they're depressed. They're overworked. They're, you know, and I brought, you know, two of them on, you know, to give them, you know, that it's not the degree that makes the person. You make the degree, you make the choices in your life and the decisions, and you have to decide now, are you going to be the best at what you do? Or are you going to be average? And we don't have room for average. The market has already been beat down and depressed enough that we need to stand out from the gate with our first product and do it to the best of our ability. And, you know, through those calls and through having the director of Georgia on and, you know, through the feedback from fine people like yourself, you know, they can see that and feel that and believe that now. And it's, you know, as I constantly say, it's amazing.
Well, as we begin to wind down, Sean, and wrap this up a little bit, please tell people how they can get more information about Fedora Outlier, about the books, the MacMaster series, the new iOS series. Give some contact information or tell whatever you want people to know about how to take the step to get more involved with what you guys are doing.
Well, you can always reach us at fedoraoutlier.com. So F as in Frank, fedoraoutlier.com. And if you need to reach me directly, you can always call my cell phone. Doesn't mean I'm going to answer, but I do have voicemail and I will call you back. But it's 404-368-8779. And if you need to reach me or my team, you can call us at 888-958-6979. And we have a dial by name directory, so you'll get their extension. And if I could just leave with one parting piece of advice, that would be, if you think you can or if you think you can't, you are right. And if you guys listen to our Delivering Access podcast, I'll always say that, because the power of what you can and can't do is in the decision that you make to either do it or not do it. So thank you guys for having me on, and I really appreciate this opportunity to tell our story.
Thank you. It's been fabulous getting a chance to talk with you.
Sure thing.
It has been a pleasure, and thank you much for doing it. And I'm assuming that people can go to fedoraoutlier.com and find out about your podcast as well.
They can find out about the podcast. They can find out about the OPAC Guide series of books, the Master Series, the upcoming release of the iOS Master Pack, and the soon-to-be-released in the fall iOS Master Series. And I'm actually working on another special project that's going to unpack apps that people would want to use with VoiceOver on the Mac, and walk them through pressing every single button. So look out for that as well.
We sure will.
Excellent. And we'll bring it to a close with that. Thank you so much, Vishon, for your time and for the good information. I encourage everyone to check out Fedora Outlier and the MacMaster series and the new things that are coming along and the books and the podcast. Vishon does a nice podcast where he interviews people similar to what we've done here by kind of putting him on the hot seat this time. We turned the tables a bit, but he does a nice job of interviewing people who are, as you say, out there empowering other people. So it's worth checking out. And thank you so much for being here. And Allison, as always, thank you, and this is Robert the Tech Doctor. I'll say so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.